Yeah, I'm just asking the question whether or not we have created a false sense of security by not, in the first place, making certain disclosures to the public. I mean, we heard statements yesterday that there were no confirmed cases, but there had to be some suspected cases with persons being actively tested prior to yesterday. And should this not have been reported to the public?
I don't understand why, if there are no confirmed cases, when you confirm the cases, you report to the public.
Yeah, but all the countries were right up to be saying...
But why is a suspected case? If you got a temperature, you're a suspected case.
Well, I don't know if it's as simple as that. But the point I'm making that people were so sure...
I am not comfortable with this conversation. I honestly think that when you have a confirmation... My understanding is that the confirmation was received and the information was communicated to the public at the first available opportunity. When the Prime Minister spoke last night, she had no knowledge that there were confirmed cases, and she spoke to that reality at that time. So we're hearing a different reality spoken to. What would you like to have done 4 days ago if you had heard that there were suspected cases?
Well, we should talk about isolation and that sort of thing.
But the people have been isolated, sir.
Who people?
The people who were suspected were isolated. That's what the statement also said.
Well, all right, we go by what the statement said. Anyhow.
No, let's go by what the statement said. Come off it. You got to be fair, okay? You have to be fair. The patients came in to Barbados, and they were experiencing symptoms of viral infection, and they were referred to the Ministry of Health for further evaluation.
I don't know how to...
The persons are placed in isolation, and they will remain there until they recover.
Leave it at that, Peter.
So my thing is, what would you prefer? Basically, sir, if anybody has a flu, anybody got flu-like symptoms, anybody got temperature, you are suspected. So you're saying that you want a publication of all the names of the people who are suspected? Who got flu? Who got fever?
Peter, leave it at that, huh?
I think people are expecting miracles, and I think that they're being unfair in many instances, honestly.
No, it's not a question to be
answered. Sir, you are not, we are not in a position now. I don't know. What's your profession?
You ain't got any.
Right. Okay. I'm a political consultant. I am not a doctor. I don't have any epidemiological experience. I don't have any training in infection control. I don't know any of these things. So I take my time from a team of people who have been assembled that know about these things. And my thing is, if we put our trust in these people, why are we questioning their judgment regarding the release of information?
But nobody's questioning anybody's judgment.
But that's what you're just telling me, that you would like to have known before.
It's just a question was raised. I just asked a simple question as to whether...
All right, no problem.
That should have occurred.
I think that the information is released at the point in time where you know that somebody is infected. I feel that there is a fear, there's a danger in releasing information on people who are suspected, especially in light of the fact that the symptoms are such that, you know.
No problem with that. But my other query, though, is we talk about isolation. We're asking people to act of their own free will and isolate themselves and gathering in certain numbers. What rules or laws are there to control these behaviors that we're seeking to prevent?
Well, the first step is that it's voluntary. Okay. The second step is that then the authorities will have to control such gatherings. So my understanding is that what you do is you say to people first, don't gather in those kinds of situations. You protect the elderly and vulnerable by saying you will have homes and so on closed for visiting hours, and you put the hospital to be suspended visiting hours. That's the first thing you do. Hold on a second. The second thing that you would do, if people don't take the message, Then you have to enforce it, which is the step we will come to. We got to take a break. Just stick a pin. Welcome to Dr. Brass Talks. Good morning.
Yeah, Peter, sir.
Sorry, yeah.
One last thing. I know the Ministry of Education announced that schools will be closed tomorrow to facilitate a meeting of education professionals at Sherbourne.
School will be closed tomorrow for this reason?
No, this announcement came before.
Oh, okay, before, right, okay.
And to meet at Sherbourne to discuss the whole issue with the COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if the schools will still be closed and if the meeting will still happen tomorrow.
No, the schools are going to be closed. I don't know whether the meeting will happen tomorrow, but that's something that I have some issues with, because I think that our natural reaction to say, you know, I am a teacher in a school, let's have a meeting to discuss it, when in fact, the meetings are the problem. My thing is that the better thing to do is you don't need to discuss anything. You just receive instructions by email, full stop.
But
the challenge is that people who are unionized and so on believe that they have the right to demand answers and raise questions and whatnot. There's not time for that foolishness, you know?
I don't think so.
If it is that we are told the schools are closing because we think, then just send an email to the teachers and tell them to stop home, full stop.
I just want to clarify, because parents are still wondering if in light of the announcement, if, you know, that thing will still take place.
I mean, I recently visited another government department, which I won't identify, in which they were having a COVID meeting, you know, and I watched close to 50 people squeeze into a conference room that was designed to hold probably 10 or 15. And I thought to myself, this is so illogical. These people could be communicated to at their desk via email and given instructions regarding what conventions they're supposed to follow. So everybody coming out and sanitizing their hands and whatnot at the different stations, and then going into this room, rubbing up next to one another. I mean, that can't make sense.
There must be a public showing, man. Right. That's the problem.
So that's the thing. I think that our natural inclination to demand a meeting, I think, has to change. And what people need to do is they need to await instructions and put confidence in people who are leading them through this crisis.
Yeah, I agree. One last thing. There's a problem has been fermenting over the last 2 or 3 months with the primary school, the George Lemon Primary School. And they're apparently experiencing some smells of some gases in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And children have been falling ill for about 3 or 4 times within the last 2 or 3 months. And the people just, you know, nobody seems to be able to deal with the issue. And people are going to school all the time. Somebody fall ill, school closing early, but still going back and seeing the environment the next day, and nothing
about it. I mean, Common Mayor took us a while to determine that it was a tree, so maybe there's a similar situation here that is occurring.
Yeah. I think it needs to be investigated. It'd be better for the kids, though.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling. I have a WhatsApp message from someone saying, Peter, Dennis Kelman is to be ignored. Peter, maybe you should point out to the caller that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Italy made horrible mistakes in their initial handling of the crisis. They quickly had to make adjustments, some of which included policing behavior. African nations have been dealing with viral outbreak for years, and we are not figuring this thing out in a void. This is so true. There are examples we can modify and apply. I'm no fan of either administration, but I trust that human beings want to survive. I see no reason to believe that the best course of action won't be taken. And I like you, sir. While I may be a fan of one more than the other, the reality is that I also believe that the right steps will be taken under the circumstances. We have a team of competent people. Let us put our confidence in them. Let us allow them to take us by the hand, and let's follow the instructions that we are given regarding what we need to do next. And that is my position on the matter. You can call 536-4500 for up-to-date information of a technical nature. On this program, we just discuss stuff of a general nature. Don DeBrastats, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Wickham. Good
morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not bad. Yeah. Yourself?
I'm great.
I thought I would not have heard you on the radio today, man.
Why?
Well, I thought after the last 2 or 3 minutes last Tuesday, you would have been in hiding.
But what anyway, are
they hiding? Anyway, let's move on. Certainly.
And that's never been my personality. I think you know me well enough.
Anyway, I call about two matters.
Sure.
Right? Nothing to do with COVID, but listening to you and Glenn just now and the Prime Minister last night talk about food security. Now, this is something that has always bothered me. I'm in the critical stage of virus, the COVID. Right? So, you know how long I've been around here.
Mm-hmm.
We have a problem where people are not planting. We want people to plant now again, but nothing has changed, you know, because we still got the 2-foot monkey out there who, when I plant, come in to carry my things and nothing ain't gonna do about them.
Pretty larceny,
right? And then we got the 4-foot monkey, and you know, they're gonna be those people out there who can tell you, no, don't shoot them, don't kill them, yeah? So, you think people are going to be comfortable?
But there it is, and monkeys have 4 foot. I thought monkey had 2 foot and 2 hands.
Well,
just that they walk on their hands and feet.
One minute they walk down on their hand, and next minute they be standing up straight watching me.
So you're talking about a human being, you're talking about a monkey. Just distinguish that,
right? Yeah. Now, So we need to deal with that if we want people to get into more planting, right? Because where I live, the monkeys are all around me. Now, I got a lot to plant nothing, but I mean, they will come and even try to pick the lime. Yeah, but when they realize they're acid, they're going to throw it away, put it down. Now, what I really call about today, Visa and the Light and Power. Visa, we have an embassy in Barbados that caters to the Eastern Caribbean, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you water Visa now, you go online and you make an application. I don't remember what happened when I did mine, but they ask you certain pertinent questions. I believe that these applications are gone through before you give the person or before you invite the person to come to the embassy. And I'm speaking specifically of the people in the Eastern Caribbean. God, them go catch a plane and come up here.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I had a friend that came from St. Vincent to Barbados. Came along with the documents, a young person, gainfully employed, to go into the embassy, and within half an hour, 45 minutes, back outside, rejected. No visa. I think that is unreasonable. You get my money for the visa. You mean an airplane?
How long was the person employed?
I don't know how long the person was employed.
You said the person is young. How old?
About 25.
But how long were they working? You don't know how long they were working?
I don't know. I did not ask that part, right?
Yeah. But no. Sir, this is I'm not interrupting you. Sorry, I am interrupting you. But this is a age-old concern that many people raise, which I'm sensitive to because, as you know, I work a lot in the OECS. I've hosted people who have come up from the OECS and not received the visas. And then I have known it has become a political issue in many of the islands. From time to time, the U.S. Embassy, and I'm not defending them in this regard, have gone on missions to the OECS and spoken to people and told them, these are the kinds of documents that you need, these are the kind of situations in which you're unlikely to be able to receive an application. Someone
but Mr.
Who
Vincent, let me cross you a minute. Let me cross you a minute. So you know the officer...
I guess I interrupt you so you could interrupt me. Yeah, go
man,
ahead.
Yeah.
The officer didn't look at the documents.
Because
the officer generally doesn't look at the documents.
What I'm trying to say is that they, when they look at the application, they know they reject
the officers claim that what they have found in these islands, that documentation is not difficult to procure. So in many instances, they don't look at the documentation because the circumstances appear unlikely. What I think you're asking is that you would like to have a pre-application process where you submit your documents online. They tell you the likelihood of your being rejected, and on that basis, you don't travel. Right?
Exactly, right. Because it is not fair that you pay airfare. A visa is about $300 now, right, or whatever.
I understand, sir. I understand. I understand. What the Americans are saying, right? What the Americans are saying is that in many instances, they brief you on the circumstances under which you are unlikely to get a visa, and that persons who are in those categories are often aware of the lack of likelihood, but they apply anyhow.
But Mr. Vickham, it is about time that the leaders in the Caribbean
spoken to it.
But it is happening too often. I got to think about my brother's poor people.
Sir, I feel your pain, right, because it's an expensive. You take a family of four. All of them have to fly to Barbados.
Just remember, you're going to give me my time for the electric company here.
I am just saying to you, sir, that it's an issue that it is sensitive. It's a sensitive issue. It's an issue which I'm aware of, and I'm aware of the circumstances.
Yeah.
And part of the challenge is that you have to get people to understand the circumstances under which they are not likely to get a visa. And on those bases, they should probably not travel to Barbados to make the application. Because apparently the application only becomes formal when you arrive.
Will you tell me to come? You give me a date. You give me a time.
Right, but a date to see the consultation. When the consultation takes place, it's determined that you think. When you have a person, for example, sir, who has not been working for more than a year, okay, the person is young. They've not been working for more than a year. That person has no car, no house, no possessions. Have a few thousand dollars on the bank, right? they consider that person high risk. And invariably, people who don't get visas are people who fall into those categories. But they have, sir, the information is there. No, the information is there saying to you that if you apply and you cannot demonstrate that level of...
Don't invite me, Mr. Wickham, to your house if you know you're feeding me, man.
Sir, and sir, the point I am making to you is that if you read the documentation that presented to you when you apply, it tells you all of those things. It tells you that unless you are able to demonstrate that, you're unlikely to succeed. But the point is that many people will go forward anyhow.
Okay. All right. Let me move on to the light and power.
But don't be clear. I am not defending them in any way. And I would go further and suggest that I felt for a long time that the governments of the Caribbean needed to have been more aggressive in terms of defending the people in that regard. And I find the personal visit is particularly egregious. They are now implementing facilities where you can apply for renewals online in situations where you've had one before. But I know of a situation right after the hurricane when a severely handicapped, a severely challenged, physically challenged child from Dominica was supposed to have been going to the United States for one reason or another. And they insisted that the child come to Barbados. And the child was traveling in a wheelchair. I mean, a wheelchair, not a standard wheelchair, but one of these very sophisticated wheelchairs, because the child had, I think, a cerebral palsy or something like that. And that child was forced to come to Barbados to attend an interview. They got a visa, but I just saw that under the circumstances, it was unconscionable, especially in light of the fact that we just had a hurricane. Anyhow, I told you that I would give you the opportunity to speak about, was it light and power?
Light and power, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
On the somewhere around the end of 2018, beginning of 2019, I made a report to the power company about two rotten poles by my home. I received correspondence from the Light and Power on the 10th of April 2019. And just two paragraphs, so let me read them here to you. It says, replacement of rotten pole. It gives the number and the address. It says, we have investigated your request to have the rotten pole at the above premises rectified and wish to advise you that we will be carrying out work required in the near future. Please do not hesitate to contact our customer service section at the given number if you have any further queries. Kindly refer to this letter in any further correspondence regarding this matter. Please allow us, and this is in bold, 15 weeks from the date of this letter in order to have this work completed. Note I said I receive it on the 10th of April. I use a Light and Power calendar that I get from them every year, right? And when I count 15 weeks from the 10th of April, it took me to the 24th of July, 2019. Today, Mr. Wickham, today is Tuesday, March the 17th, is exactly 46 weeks, and nothing has been done about these two poles. Nothing, absolutely nothing. About August or so last year, I called the power company, spoke to a young lady, and my mistake is that I recorded her name, but I lose the paper. I should have staple it to the letter. I lose that. So I don't remember who I spoke to. The problem is I'm hearing constantly from Light and Power how they care. They can't care when two poles wrong my house, very, very rotten at the base, and telling me 15 weeks and now 46 weeks, nothing has been done, Mr.
You have been in contact with the Light and Power.
I said I called them about August or so last year, and I spoke to someone in customer service who was to get back to me. Today, I have not had a call from them, right? But I got my letter here telling me in 15 weeks from April 10th, I'm going to be doing work. Mm-hmm. And like I tell you, the poles, nothing to do with them. Plus, there are four lights in my street, and three of them off. It is total darkness in my gap. Yeah? No, come on, man. I know that you have to schedule your work and that, but it can't take you 46 weeks to fix two poles, to change out two poles. I know what I'm talking about, where poles are concerned, you know. So this is something that I want the light and power, and I'm using your program because Barbados hearing this, and I hope the light and power hear this. They would know the people that they send out letters to with things to be done, the hurricane season coming up. Okay. I thank you, sir. Pardon me?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. So I do hope that you are able to receive some level of response. I want to thank you for calling, sir. Yeah. I've just seen the arrival, or witnessed the arrival of the poverty advisor, who is better known as Mr. Corey Lane. I'm not sure if he has some important information to convey to us, or if his visit is an informal. Okay, his visit is an informal one.
His visit is informal, but let me just say, Peter, since I mentioned earlier that I would keep listeners updated, the Knapsack Sports on, and so those who support the young ones and their athletic pursuits at the National Stadium, those who follow online, Life 97.5 FM, carrying live coverage with the A-Team, so sports on.
Okay, thank you. You heard it here first. Sports continues. My sense is that the group has already gathered. It certainly makes a lot of sense for them to continue and finish the exercise. Tomorrow, of course, you wouldn't go back, but certainly since they're already there, they're already in contact with one another. I don't know that there is any greater harm to allowing that to continue. Peter, as a medical doctor, I'd like to remind the general public that if you have flu-like symptoms, you have traveled to or have family members who have traveled, work in the tourism sector, for example, hotel workers, taxi operators, and restaurant workers, please do not attend your doctor or polyclinic. Instead, call the hotline. Beware of going to gyms, especially gyms which are located at hotels. All mass gatherings, including teacher information meetings tomorrow, should be cancelled. In this age of technology, information can be disseminated via emails or WhatsApp. Conferences can be live streamed. There is no reason for face-to-face meeting. And remember, your COVID hotline is 536-4500. We say good morning and welcome to the next caller.
Good morning, Peter.
Morning. How are you doing there?
Well, I'm fine. I'm here. Yeah. Well, everything right now, I've got confidence in the government to do the right thing, and I'm not panicking, and I'm not worried because I am a bad asthmatic, and my husband is a diabetic, but we are taking precaution. What I am really worried about, and I'm telling you the honest truth, is the older, you know, we are mobile. We've got family that we can run to, but we've got friends. But the older person that don't have anyone, you know, and they have to go out on their own and do things on their own, those are the one I really hope to God that a neighbor can able to help, as the Prime Minister stressed, to look after each other, you know?
Yeah.
And I know it will come to Barbados, I never know when, but, we, you know, as we say, it's just like hurricane. When you hear a bad hurricane coming, it passes over, we get a little, you know, rain. But, you know, I'm just praying to God that everyone, the two persons that are, you know, isolated at the moment will get better quick and able to return to their family. And I do not want their names, as the gentleman pointed out, to be published, because the first case in Jamaica, that the lady came from the United Kingdom for a funeral. Mm-hmm. The press put her where she was staying and the funeral she was attending.
Mm-hmm.
And people going there pointing out the names out, and, you know, the names that calling to that family. When that lady is going to go back to the United Kingdom, the family is going to lumber with that.
Yeah.
You understand? And it's not nice not to put the names out. Do not give the name out, you know, and that's all. I've got confidence, and I trust the Elton people. Whatever government they are in, I would trust them to run the country when this kind of thing go out.
I'm with you on that, Winnie. I think that if it is that we trust our leaders, then we also have to trust leadership in the broader sense, because we have a team of professionals assembled and they are giving us guidance, and let's just follow the guidance.
Best. We've got the best at the moment. Yeah. We've got the number one in the world, you know, the gentleman that do the elbow, or we call it elbow, a high elbow, you know, that, you know, that team begin with E. I can't say that name. I am I'm worse than that, you know.
All right, no problem.
He's the best, and we've got him, you know? So we are happy, okay?
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling, Winnie. Yeah, appreciate it. I mean, the question is being asked about Q in the community, which is largely an old people's event. And they say that with the greatest of respect. Persons are asking if Q in the community will be canceled. Government has indicated that all gatherings in excess of 100 people will be canceled. So I don't know that CBC needs to state specifically that Q will be canceled. Clearly, they attract more than 100 people, so it can't go on. That's just the way it is. Donna Brastatz, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Yeah. I'm good. Mm-hmm. I want to deal with the COVID thing in this way. Let's look at what lessons we can learn. Mm-hmm. And where we need to get to quickly, because this may not be the only crisis we face within the next 25 years. And I wouldn't want Barbados to be in a place that it is now, 25 years from now. For example, let's thank that the tax department thank the stars that they got themselves on board and in place, and that all of us can file our taxes from the safety of our homes. And let's hope that next places like education and stuff like that would be looking to advance themselves so that when things like this occur, education and the learning can continue. You know, my thing is, if we were in the position that we needed to be in, people could register business and transact business even though the country might be in a shutdown position or a semi-shutdown position. And so when the crisis starts to clear, we'll be ready to roll off the line as quickly as possible. And so for the persons out there who are inhibiting the growth of us advancing, please pay attention. Mm-hmm. Understand that this is what you're stopping, mm-hmm. and that you have to realize that you don't live in a world by yourself. And that time, the 1950s, the 40s, have long gone, and we have to get with it.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you for calling and for making those remarks. Someone is saying, Peter, what about the cashiers? No one has mentioned us. I think there are probably, on average, about 400 or 500 job categorizations, different levels and occupations. The likelihood that each of you and every one of you will be mentioned is quite low. So what I think that persons who are cashiers need to do is follow the information which is provided regarding the concept of social distancing and the extent to which they need to keep a distance between them and the persons that they serve. There is a hotline you can call, 436-536-4500, if you have need for further information. But I do not think that every single work category will get information on what you're supposed to do. I have not seen a bulletin for political consultants. But what I assume is that a political consultant, I should follow rules of social distancing, which says I should not attend large meetings and I should work remotely wherever possible, and that I will do. That works great for me because I love working remotely. I hate going into offices and going to meetings and things of that nature. I am a lot happier in front of my computer where I can work effectively. So if I were you as a cashier, ma'am, that's what I would do. I would follow the rules and regulations regarding social distancing. This idea that you can put on a mask and everything will be all right is silly. My understanding is that the masks do nothing to help you from protect you from other people. And more importantly, if you're wearing a mask, you're going to be fiddling with it, touching your face to make sure it's fitting right or whatnot, moving it when you need to speak to somebody. And all that is doing is helping to spread infection. So this feeling that people who are quote unquote on the front line should be given masks is something which I don't believe it is supported by any kind of medical evidence. Donna Brastatz, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Peter.
Morning, how are you doing?
Hi, Paul Gibson, how are you keeping?
Hey, Paul, good to hear you. Good. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to make a comment regarding the announcement that was made this morning regarding from the Minister of Health. Now, we were very concerned, of course, that that the government was using the WHO guidelines and so on and not managing the port situation. And we made mention of that, after which we saw a response.
Paul, who is we?
When I'm speaking of the People's Party for Democracy and Development.
Were you invited to the meeting of the social partners?
I was.
Right, and you made your comments there.
We actually we saw the presentation. We asked some questions regarding the number of tests that were on the island, and we know that there were at that time.
I know, but Paul, what I'm trying to find out from you
there were 100 tests, you know.
Right. What exactly is the reason for interventions beyond that? You had a social partnership opportunity. You expressed your views at that point. Why are y'all taking pot shots at government now?
Oh, no. This is live. This is a live. What's happening in Barbados, Peter, is a live situation.
I understand that, Paul, but I am just saying, Paul, I am saying that this is clearly political. You are calling as a representative of one of the smaller political parties.
Yeah, but you're when you start that way, you're not going down the lane that I'm in. You're in a completely different lane. The lane I'm in is that we are now in a live situation in Barbados, and one of my primary reasons was to give some advice to persons that were diabetics and so on, and to also
But then you're calling in your capacity as a pharmacist.
Okay, so let me speak to you in my capacity as a pharmacist.
Right, when you start talking about government taking thing and not taking action, I'm just asking you, what was the need for that? Let me talk to Paul, the pharmacist.
Okay.
Because I understand that you're a fairly decent pharmacist. Yeah.
All right, but we wanted to just...
let me make it clear, I don't think you lack political decency, I just think you lack political success. That's not a slight on you.
Yeah, my success is determined by the Almighty, you know, and I really? Am a successful man, don't worry. Yeah.
So what is the Almighty's view on this current situation with the COVID? Why is he letting this happen to us?
What I will say, though, that is more pertinent to what's happening at KNAPSAC, and that's why I was really calling about. Right. I believe
all right. Paul, the pharmacist.
One of the concerns I have...
No. I want the pharmacist. You're talking about diabetics and things. Get back to that.
Nobody
diabetics. Get back to that. Don't be with KNAPSAC.
No. That's the primary reason why we call me, because it's so current.
But you said you were calling to talk about KNAPSAC, about the pharmacy, about the diabetics and so...
No, I'm speaking about COVID. I'm calling to speak about COVID-19. Mm. One of the things that are happening, we have about over 300 students sitting at KNAPSAC, eating, interacting, like how kids do and everything. And we are at stage one. We have moved from stage zero of the COVID epidemic to from stage zero to stage one. And most persons are trying to be proactive at this stage because you really don't want it. You want to mitigate it going on to stage two. And you do that as was recommended by the Prime Minister in her speech, that you stop public gatherings and so on. I'm just saying that if I were a parent in Barbados right now, I would literally go and pick my child up from KNAPSAC. The reason being is that when you have this many kids together, they will go back home and say, Granny, look at my trophy. Mama, they're hugging, they're kissing, and they're so on. And they're spreading whatever they picked up at KNAPSAC, whatever that is, whether it is flu, whether it's COVID.
Let me ask you an epidemiological question. Do you think that they're at greater risk today than they were yesterday?
I do.